This is Bob Whitaker. The name of this program is The Untrained Eye. In lieu of an announcement, which I'm going to put on later, I repeat again why I call it The Untrained Eye. When the United States first sent a satellite around the Earth and made pictures, that was in the 1960s, the ambassador to Britain thought it would be fun to have the head of the British Flat Earth Society come over and look at the photographs of this round Earth. The head of the British Round Earth Society showed up, looked at the pictures, was very grateful, and he said, "It is amazing how, to the untrained eye, the Earth looks round." Well, that is the way most of the people who believe in political correctness look at the world. The rest of us see the real world. They have learned not to see the round Earth. They have trained eyes, and they see exactly what they want to see. Hence the name of this program, The Untrained Eye. Now, one very good example is what I'm going to talk about tonight. It's called routine racism. A person like me sees that everybody, white and black, is a white racist. The reason that most people don't see that rather obvious fact is because they have trained eyes. Their eyes are trained to see the word racism and think of specific things. For example, today, in order to be a non-racist, you have to know, you have to agree, and this includes respectable conservatives, liberals, everybody, that the white race has got to go. Solving the race problem is a code term for solving the white problem. The fact is, we all know that. We're just not allowed to see it or take it out and look at it. The race problem, everybody agrees, will be solved by third world immigration and intermarriage. Now, nobody asks for this wonderful solution to a race problem to take place in Asia or Africa. There is no race problem in Asia or Africa or in the browner parts of South America or on Jamaica. The only countries that have this, quote, race problem, unquote, are white countries. We have to have massive third world immigration into Australia, the United States, New Zealand, all of Europe, Russia. Nobody worries about those huge undeveloped areas that could use some good workers in Africa or countries like Korea or Japan, actually Japan and Taiwan, that have a European standard of living and are less crowded than Holland. Now, why is it that we insist that Holland should bring in lots and lots of immigrants? Let's be obvious, it's white. So the solution to the race problem is a solution to the white problem. We all know that. And now let's give another example. I just brought up the fact that what we call solving the race problem is actually solving the white problem. Now, if the black race were threatened, if Africa were threatened with massive third world immigration, white people would be expected to be worried about it. After all, the black race in its homeland is being threatened with genocide. If China were taking in vast numbers of immigrants, and they didn't want to, the average Chinese didn't want to, which I can guarantee you wouldn't, we would all be expected, as white people, to worry about it. After all, this is genocide. But the one thing that never occurs to anybody is, if you say to a non-white, the white race is threatened, the one thing you do not expect is for him to sympathize with that. The whites are supposed, even the Ku Klux Klan, I mean, I'm talking about the old Ku Klux Klan back in the 20s when a lot of them were illiterate, but white people were not expected to simply accept the disappearance of any other race. The idea that any race except a non-white race could possibly have any sympathy with genocide against the white race, with us who oppose it, is ridiculous. Why? Wouldn't a normally moral person have concern about the genocide of another race? Not only would I have the right to object to the disappearance of my race, I would sort of expect any decent human being to have the same sort of objection. But it would never occur until I just mentioned it to anybody that non-whites would have that kind of concern. Why? Well, because we don't consider non-whites to be quite human. And that includes black people. Everybody raised in Western society has this blind spot. They could not imagine that anyone who is not white could have the sort of sympathy a white person would be expected to have. What I'm talking about is everybody else is looking at the world with a trained eye. And so they don't see this rather obvious point that when you say that non-whites simply cannot be concerned about other races, their very existence, you're saying they're not quite human. Let me give you another example. I noticed, I've listened to a lot of these documentaries and so forth about animals and how innocent they are. They talk about, you can't blame a lion for strangling a deer to death. He's just following his normal instincts, but they're basically good. They follow nature. We always hear that. One day, as I was coming in, I heard someone saying that same thing. They live with nature. They may seem cruel to us, but they are very virtuous beings. It turned out they weren't talking about lions or tigers or bears. They were talking about some non-white group that you may think what they were doing was cruel, but actually they're just following nature. The more of these things I listen to, the more I notice that we talk about non-whites in exactly the same way we talk about animals. They are following their instincts. They're not expected to rise above their instincts. A good example of this is people like O.J. Simpson. You make it very, very clear that he would never date a black woman. This is not a new thing. I remember Sammy Davis Jr. There was a roast of Sammy Davis Jr. back in, I think, the 80s. I don't know if any of you remember Sammy Davis Jr., but he married a blonde Swedish actress named Maj Britt. She thought she was going to get a lot of good publicity, so she wore a wedding dress that looked like something that a whore would be very embarrassed to wear on the streets. In the 80s, there was a roast of Sammy Davis Jr., and this was in his past, and a black singer, a female black singer, said, I couldn't understand. She was very grateful to him for helping her out back in the 60s, and she said, I couldn't understand why he was helping me. I wasn't anybody special, and I wasn't white. Well, Sammy Davis Jr. had to grit his teeth because he remembered the time when he wouldn't chase anything but a white woman, just like O.J. Simpson. Now, you know and I know that O.J. Simpson would never date a woman who looked like the daughters he produced with a white woman. They have too much black blood in them. Sammy Davis Jr. didn't want any black women. He made it very clear. Now, nobody blames them for this. They are, after all, following their instincts. They want something pretty and blonde. And the funny thing the media leaves out when they talk about this is, what kind of assumption are you making here? Well, if you have a trained eye, you will understand there's nothing racist about a liberal fighting for a black man's right to have a blonde woman. Now, a black man wants to marry a blonde and have some half-breed children with whom he would have nothing to do. I, on the other hand, am an evil racist because I love blonde beauty too, but I want to preserve it. That makes me a racist. Now, the funny thing is, nobody in this society will have any trouble understanding why I am the racist here and why the black guy who's just following his instincts wants something which the observer has decided he has a right to because it's pretty. This also includes the fact that underneath all this is the assumption that black women or mixed blood women are not particularly pretty. So nobody ever says that a black guy who wants a blonde girl is being racist. I'm being racist If you watch anything produced in Canada, television special or something, or for that matter, Swedish commercials, you will see all the blonde girls are with very black guys. They go out of their way to take a picture of a very black guy with a blonde staged walking by. If a girl is shown kissing somebody, it's always a very dark-looking Middle Easterner. That's in Swedish commercials, that's in Canadian television, that's more or less required. It's the dues that one pays for political correctness. This is required anti-racism. Liberals agree that blondes are more beautiful and that dark guys have a right to them. Now, I remember back when Bob Jones University in South Carolina had its tax-deductible status taken away because it would not allow interracial dating. There was one interview, and only one, that a reporter had with students from Bob Jones about this. Two of the students were white, one was black. Well, the reporter asked the black student why he was being discriminated against. And the black student said, "I am only allowed to date black women. They are only allowed to date white women. Why am I being discriminated against?" That put the liberal in a terrible position. After all, getting liberals out of a terrible position is what respectable conservatives are for. So he immediately, being stuck in his own white supremacist trap, he immediately turned to the white students and they got off on something about freedom of religion or something safe. They were good, respectable conservatives, and the black guy was not allowed to speak again. Because, obviously, if you say to a black man, you're only allowed to date black women, and a white man, you're only allowed to date white women, you're discriminating against the black guy. You're being racist against the black guy. And nobody's going to notice that except me, because I don't have this trained eye. Today, the black, quote, leadership, unquote, which I'm going to be talking about, takes this sort of thing for granted and goes to the bank with it. Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Tumi, I think his changed name was. I thought he was a genius. He thought I was a genius. Anyway, my press man in Washington used to always have dinner once a week with him at the Ethiopian restaurant in Washington, and we were all separatists. Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, died in Africa. He went to one of the poorest countries in Africa, worked there for black people, and died there. Now, he was the founder of the Black Panthers, by the way. Carmichael is not what they call a black leader. A black leader in our society is somebody who sits around in the Maryland suburbs, gets a huge salary, to repeat cliches, and worries about the Confederate flag. He doesn't go off to Africa. Are you kidding? It's not a nice place. Black leaders are never going to talk about real racism, the real racism we live with, because it ruined their whole gig. They get paid full-time, talentless people who get paid full-time to fight, quote, racism, unquote, which is defined only for the trained eye. Another example of this is back when Jesse Jackson first ran for the Democratic presidential nomination, I forget exactly when it was, the media reported a problem that the white candidates had. The white candidates were all concerned that they were going to make Jesse look like an idiot. And the media understood this perfectly. Now, Jesse Jackson could easily be made to look like an idiot because he's a black, quote, leader, unquote. Black leaders never say anything that's not in the script. I'd studied some neurology and discovered there's a frontal lobe and a parietal lobe and a bacchal lobe. Thinking in the mind takes place in the frontal lobe. The parietal lobe is where you recite from. And if you look at a black, quote, leader, unquote, in an interview talking, you know very well he's not going to say anything that's outside the script. He's there to have a black skin. Thinking blacks need not apply. In fact, you can sort of, if you've done interrogations I have, you can see his eyes go out. The light in his eyes go out, and he leans back, and his mouth starts working straight from the parietal lobe. There was one guy who was a black spokesman on the Jefferson thing, this mulatto servant, that they proved that she had a child, a slave of Jefferson. She had a child by a Jefferson. The genetic test cannot tell you which male Jefferson, probably his cousin. So there was a long discussion about this. Press, of course, they even made a movie about it, Jefferson, who had this child. This black guy was the black spokesman, the guy sitting there in the black skin, which is what he was getting paid for. And these people were discussing DNA tests, and they were discussing what this actually proved and the probability that it was actually Jefferson. And this guy just kept saying whatever a black skin is supposed to say on television. Then, near the end of the program, somebody asked him if he had read the actual report like everybody else there had. He said, of course not. What he didn't add was, I am here to be black. The reason he came to the program was to make one point, and that was that this slave girl was underage, and therefore that Jefferson not only was a hypocrite by having a child by a black girl, but that he was also a child molester. That was the only thing this guy was there to say, and he managed to say it. He said it after everybody had agreed that the probability that Jefferson himself had produced the child was a good deal less than 50-50. He didn't hear a word of it. Sitting there in his black skin, he said what the black guy that they were paying to be there would have said if they had never been born. And then he threw in the one thing that he was there to say. Now, I have experience when I talk about how people's eyes go out and about lying and all that stuff. I have been a professional interrogator on and off since before most of the people listening were born. Every politician is, to a certain extent, an interrogator. And you can watch these black, quote, leaders, unquote, and you can tell, if you're used to watching people when they talk, when their eyes go out, when they're going right back to the script. And I challenge you to find anything that a black leader says that you couldn't have written for him already. So let's go back to this guy who was the black skin sitting there, who was paid to show up in his black skin on this program about Jefferson. And if a white man had said, no, I didn't read the report, and then made it clear he hadn't listened to a word that had been said and just made the point that he came there to make, the white man would be ridiculed. Any white man would be ridiculed. But this guy's black. One woman, I remember one black woman saying, the only reason America's rich is because they had all that black slave labor. Nobody said that was a pretty dumb thing to say. She's black. We assume, I'm talking about the media, assume that blacks are not supposed to make any sense. I can't see how you could get more racist than that. But again, going back to old Jesse Jackson, and when he first appeared there, and all the media agreed that these politicians were going to have a terrible problem because they couldn't make Jesse look dumb. Nobody said, look, he's a grown man. He can take care of himself. He isn't. The press never questioned the fact that a black man, a guy who shows up in a black skin, is not supposed to make sense. You're supposed to be able to make an idiot of him if you want to. These are pretty vicious assumptions. I'm a racist because I want to save my race, but everything we assume about blacks, or the media and so forth assume, is about as insulting as you can possibly get. To say that a black man who can only date black women is being discriminated against, a white man who can only date white women is not being discriminated against, that's a pretty extreme insult. But if you assume that everybody, including respectable conservatives, has a trained eye, it's no problem. I had a friend who was in the Naval Reserve, and he was talking about a guy who had Tourette's syndrome. Tourette's syndrome is a disease of the mind which causes you to say the worst possible thing at the worst possible time. All of us feel like we have it from time to time, but this is actually a disease. Usually, it manifests itself by somebody who something wrong with his brain, and in the middle of a conversation with perfectly decent people, he will suddenly start screaming obscenities and filthy words. It's an awful condition to be in. So he told me about a guy in the Navy who had Tourette's syndrome, and it showed itself by the fellow screaming out racist remarks, calling the N-word and worse, to black naval personnel. They beat the hell out of him. I said, well, were they disciplined? And the fellow looked at me like I had a tulip growing out of my nose. Of course they weren't disciplined. They were black. Black people follow their instincts. If somebody says something about black people, you beat the hell out of them. I don't care if you are in a Navy uniform. The skin under that uniform is black, and you're going to beat the hell out of him, right? Well, not necessarily right. If the skin on that uniform is white, and you beat up a black man for having Tourette's syndrome, a disease, which they knew he had, then you go and beat up that black guy, you're going to jail, and you're probably going to be thrown out of the Navy. Not so the blacks. They follow their instincts. They're good. It's like the lion biting on the neck of the deer. We assume that blacks follow their instincts, and other non-whites. Now, with blacks, it's pretty blatant in our society. But this racism applies to other groups as well, and sometimes it's a little more subtle. Now, here's where we get into a great deal more subtlety here, and it may be the first time you've ever heard this. But I had a Catholic friend of mine in Washington. He's an old Irish politico, and he and I couldn't believe how dumb these conservatives were on politics. He was from Philadelphia. One time I told a joke about a Catholic and a Protestant, and the Catholic in the joke turned out to be smart. And this very cagey Irishman looked at me and he said, you know, I don't like these jokes where the Catholic always comes out to be the smarter. He said, it makes me sound like a minority group. That's pretty shrewd. You will notice that every time we look down on another group, we have this sort of idea that we always have a stereotype to protect ourselves from realizing that we simply consider them inferior. We'll start with animals again. Nobody wants to be called an animal. Well, a lot of people say they do, but the fact is they don't want to be looked on as just one more animal. So how do we cover the fact that we consider a dog to be an inferior being to a human being? We talk about dogs' loyalty. We talk about their following their natural instincts. We used to talk about how man is the only animal who kills for pleasure. I think we've gotten over that one. But we always talk about how good animals are. We put them in their place, but we do it by saying how good they are. Now, if you don't have a trained eye, as I say, and you listen to the average documentary about non-white societies, you find that you really can't tell the difference between the way we talk about a non-white society and the way we talk about animals. But we always say they're good. I said the other day that one thing that the modern thought, enlightened modern thought, and the Nazis agree on is that Jews are not human. Now, what I meant by that, as I stated in the article, was Jews are either angels or devils. Hitler made them devils, so our society makes them angels. Jews are not angels. Jews are not devils. Jews are people. Let me give you another example. I had a drinking buddy of mine in college who had actually been a Jew in a concentration camp in Germany as a child. And he used to get very upset with me. And it's about the only time I think I've ever had that somebody got upset with me for being too nice about Jews. Because somebody from my political perspective, if you say white people shouldn't be wiped out, then you're a Nazi. Everybody agrees on that. Every respectable conservative will be the first one to scream Nazi at you. But this fellow was upset at me for being too soft on Jews. He was a good Jew. The reason he said that, he was talking about the fact that Jews turned in his family to the Gestapo, or whoever it was, the SA, the German government. And I said, naturally, I said, well, they were probably under a lot of pressure, you know, they were afraid or something, and he started screaming at me, this after a couple of beers. He said, no, they just turned us in. They betrayed us. And every time I tried to make an excuse for the large number of Jews who were turning over Jews to Nazis, he would get upset. He would say I was being soft on them. As I say, for me to be told that I'm being soft on Jews was rather a new experience. But he actually got very upset because he was in the position in Nazi Germany that whites are in today. People always say, well, Jews are loyal to each other, but whites aren't. We're back to this angel-devil bit. Under the Nazis, the Jews were the best friends the Nazis had for turning in other Jews. Somehow, when everybody turns against you, you turn against each other. And that's what whites have done, but it's not new. It's not strictly a white-Gentile characteristic. Now, a lot of Jews sold out other Jews, but absolutely nobody is going to prosecute them or bring it up. They're Jews. They're either angels or they're devils, but they're not normal people who have to answer for their actions. On the other hand, I have one reader whose father was a concentration camp guard when he was 14 years old. The SS told him to do it. They almost stripped him of his citizenship sometime in the 90s. He already told the government that he had been a guard at that camp, but the government, apparently all the old Nazis are dying out, so they had to do something. And so they went after this guy who had been a 14-year-old guard. And the essential point was that this 14-year-old should have walked up to the SS who were running the camp, the guys with the skull and crossbones on their caps and a pistol on their sides, and say, I'm not going to guard this camp, to hell with you. He didn't do that. On the other hand, Jews who say they sat there and watched their family shot, their grandmother tortured, their daughters raped, no matter what, they just sat there because, as somebody said, you weren't there. You don't understand how tough it was. They're Jews, and therefore, they're supposed to sit there and suffer. Now, if you're a German, if you're a Gentile, you're supposed to fight back. Jews are not supposed to be able to hate. Henry Kissinger, whose family did disappear in Austria after he left to escape Hitler, Henry Kissinger is a professional diplomat. And he made one statement that nobody will ever forgive him for. He said, any people that has been persecuted for 2,000 years is doing something wrong. Now, this doesn't mean that other people aren't doing something wrong. It just means that human beings are not so constructed so that everybody else is guilty. It's easier for people who can believe that Jews are devils to turn around and believe that Jews are angels. If your eye is trained that way, then you will believe that they are angels or devils on command. To me, that is racism. It doesn't matter whether you think of them as angels or as devils. If you think of Jews as non-human, that is racism. That is anti-Semitism and so forth. But again, I don't have the trained eye. I'm an anti-Semite because I can't imagine that a group of people could be kicked around 2,000 years and have a perfectly sane, rational, friendly attitude toward the rest of humanity. I wouldn't. It goes back to a joke I remember that would apply beautifully to the Jews. I think I told it on this program before, but us old folks get repetitious. And it's a good point. Fella out in the country, he went to the local store, talked to the storekeeper, and he said, listen, I'm new in this town. and you know everybody in this town. What kind of people are they? Well, the country storekeeper stood there a minute, and he said, well, how were the people in the last town you were in? And the guy says, oh, they were terrible. They would persecute you for nothing. They would hate you. I'm a perfectly lovable, fine person, but and I tried so hard, but they all hated me and they, for no reason. And the storekeeper thought about that a second, and he said, well, you couldn't have been in that town very long. How were the people in the town before that? And the fellow said, oh, they were awful. He said, I tried so hard. I'm such a nice person. I never hurt anybody. I never insult anybody. I always treat everybody well. I've suffered. These people were horrible to me for no reason. So the storekeeper stood there for a minute, and he said, you know, the people in this town are going to be about the same way. If somebody says everybody else is crazy and I'm sane, you wonder a lot about him, unless he's a Jew. If he's a Jew, he's not human. He's an angel. And therefore, you can take it for granted, and everybody does, that Jews are just wonderful people who keep getting attacked for no reason. Now, that takes pretty good brainwashing to make you think that way. I want to go into some more examples. Let's go back to the original example of the when we're looking at a dog, we don't say dogs are inferior. We say they're superior. We talk about animals, since we feel comfortably, I guess I should say that, we feel comfortably superior to animals. Therefore, we don't like to say they're inferior. That's assumed. Routine racism, which is what I'm talking about, is assumed. It's an assumption. The trained eye overlooks it. But we are very, very complimentary when we are talking about someone to whom we feel comfortably superior. So, Jesse Jackson is a great idealist. O.J. Simpson is just following his instincts. Sammy Davis Jr. was just following his instincts. Nobody questions that. Because white people feel comfortably superior to non-whites. That's where it comes from. This has a very wide sweep. For example, when we talk about the Chinese, the Japanese, or something, I always notice this sort of they're wise, they're honest, they're everything but human. There's always this image of the Oriental wise man and the deep roots of the Oriental culture and this, that, and the other, and on and on and on. Well, Shakespeare talked about that around 1600, and he was talking to a largely illiterate audience, and everybody understood exactly what he was saying. He said, methinks thou protestest too much. So, whites feel comfortably superior. The next question you ask is, why are white people trying to do away with themselves if they feel so superior? It's because this superiority is a moral superiority. It is a self-denying superiority. For example, everybody gets upset with you when you become, quote, selfish, unquote, because you like the white race. This is, quote, selfish, unquote. If you give things away, you are being charitable toward other groups. You give your women away, if you give your existence away, all these things are sort of considered superior moral traits. Let me remind you, no one is ever going to say that any person without a white skin is going to have the slightest sympathy with anybody with a white skin who is worried about the disappearance of people with white skins. It never even occurs to them. Why? Because they're inferior. They go by their instincts. They're not supposed to be like us. And if that leads to self-destruction, all the better. That's morally superior. Remember, the old Christians, they would take their old, back in the 4th and 5th centuries, they would have stories about somebody who was beautiful and blonde and all that stuff. Some beautiful woman who'd marry a blonde, brilliant man. Something that comes straight out of Nazi literature. And they would then agree to have no children. They would be chaste. But by chaste, it was meant not that they would have sex in marriage, but that they would die without children. I can't explain to you why this was such a wonderful ideal. I can tell you that that came around a long time before whites started trying to destroy themselves with this interracial marriage bit. But it's always considered to be an act of self-sacrifice when an American says a bad thing about America, a white person says a bad thing about white people. On the subject of Americans, there's another attitude, which is exactly the same, comes from the same roots. There's this image of Europeans as very, very sophisticated. Europeans love it. We're just more sophisticated than you people are. Apparently, they believe we believe it. They don't. Again, I was an interrogator, so maybe I do look behind some of these things. But all this business about Europeans being sophisticated, again, is a cover. A European newspaper will headline an American criticism of France or whatever. You wouldn't do that in the United States. Who cares? If France, people get upset with France from time to time recently, but not the way the French get upset with Americans. What Americans say bothers Europeans to death. What Europeans say is of next to no interest. Now, I can say the same thing, even more so, about blacks. All these people on the pro-white side are always quoting blacks or Jews or somebody saying nasty things about whites. Well, let me break the news to you. Whites don't care. A black guy can stand in the middle of the street and scream about white people all day long, and no white is going to break a sweat. On the other hand, if a white person whispers to another white person that he wouldn't let a black guy date his daughter, that's the kind of thing that black leaders wake up in a cold sweat about. We all know that. We don't care if the dog barks at us, but the dog cares if we yell at the dog. That's sort of the way the pecking order goes. This business with the Europeans, again, I believe it was Julie Andrews who had the first interracial kiss on network television. I think it was Harry Belafonte. He was a real fanatic for intermarriage. She was English, so they had to break this barrier, so they did it with her. Pierce Brosnan, the James Bond actor, he's an Englishman, and he was the first white star as 007 to have a black co-star, his lady love and so forth. And as somebody said, it looked like that got more publicity than the whole rest of the movie. There is an attitude among Americans that it's okay for a European to do it. Now, nobody's going to say that. But I notice they always have to start with Europeans. Christopher Hitchens is an interesting example of this. Hitchens is an Englishman. He came over here with The Nation magazine, which is always said the communists were nice guys, let's just put it that way. None of the American commentators would get on and talk the old Marxist line. Hitchens, with his English accent, did. This was not accidental that he had an English accent. An American who came over here and repeated on our comment shows the same old leftist stuff that's been discredited 1,000 times would be laughed off the stage. Not Hitchens. He had an English accent. He was expected to think like that. These are the same people we always hear are so sophisticated. But what we really believe is, let's run down the list here of what we really, what Americans, white Gentile Americans, really believe. Chinese are silly little people, but they're real wise. And they're real deep in tradition. And if they slaughtered each other and let their children die of worms while they had their wise men sitting around wondering about the clapping of a single hand, well, that was because they were Oriental. That's all right. Pat him on the head. Say, my Catholic politico friend didn't like that pat on the head. He's smart enough, America enough, so he saw it. When I told a joke that had the Catholic coming out ahead, he didn't like that pat on the head. He came right back at me. Nobody else is going to do that. So, what do people really believe about Jews? Well, they believe whatever they're told to believe about Jews. Jews aren't really human. Nazis agree on that. Modern liberal opinion agrees on that. Evangelical right calls them the chosen people. Nice, solid pat on the head. And the funny thing is, the Jews fall for it. If you're thought of as an angel, I guarantee you, knowing human nature, you're going to be thought of as a devil. Americans think of Europeans as silly little people. They wouldn't praise them that much if they didn't. They wouldn't be that impressed by the accents. For example, every American knows that World War I, World War II, all that brilliant European thought led them to nearly wipe each other out. If it hadn't been for the United States, Europe would have belonged to Joseph Stalin, although actually it would have belonged to Hitler before that. I forgot. Yeah. And when Europeans react or say stuff that every American considers kind of childish and out of date, Americans cover it by saying they're very, very sophisticated. But actually, Americans look down on Europeans. But it's a subtle kind of looking down on. It's not the sort of thing where Europeans have a perfectly good right to look down on us. I don't claim to be particularly sophisticated or whatever. And I can see why they would. I mean, there's no greater critic of the United States than I am. I remember my father was in London back about 1958 or something, and he was walking down the street in London, and some Englishman walked up to him and said, "You're an American, aren't you?" And my father said, "Yes." And he said, "You know, I know some very bad things about America." And my father said, "I know more bad things about America." And that sort of ended the conversation right there. I know more bad things about America than just about any European living. Still, I also know, and this is another one of them, that we have this basic attitude that Europeans, even Europeans of all people, white people, are a very, very, very high class of animal. Jews are, blacks are, Chinese are. We look at them as just not the same human species as we are. Look out for that praise, because underneath it is what you may call racism or provincialism. But it's, remember, but the thing is, if you have a trained eye, I'm the racist around here. I'm the one who considers these people. There's one more code word for racism I have to finish off on. It's called proliferation. Now remember, I'm the racist here. Back in the 50s, I used to say these colored people should not have their own countries. They should not have equal sovereignty. They just can't handle it. This is a racist position. Now, recently, nobody minded too much while these black dictators were taking over and all the persecutions and all that stuff. That happened to black people. Nobody minds when they are instrumental in turning black people over to black tyrants, or the AIDS epidemics, or the starvation all over Africa. That's all right. After all, their dictators are running around in black skin. They're following their instincts, and that's just fine. But suddenly, this attitude changed when non-white countries started getting their hands on nuclear bombs. Have you noticed that? All of a sudden, all this thing that no matter what the color of your skin or your country, you have every bit the right to be sovereign and to act like a sovereign country as any white country does. Well, we didn't go to pieces when Britain got the aid bomb. We didn't even go to pieces. We were worried about the communists a lot. France got the aid bomb. Certainly Israel has the aid bomb. But all of a sudden, when these brown people start getting a hold of it, it's called nuclear proliferation. Now, according to the theory I was raised with, and I argued about all those years as an evil racist, if the United States has a right to an A-bomb, if Britain has a right to an A-bomb, then brown people have a right to an A-bomb. No, but we don't call it, we don't put it that way, do we? We have trained eye. No, suddenly it's brown fingers that are getting on those nuclear triggers. Suddenly South Korea is getting a hold of an A-bomb. And everybody's scared half to death. That could really get serious. You know, it's fine to sit around and theorize about equal sovereignty and all that stuff, but an A-bomb? And you can't say colored hands can't be on the nuclear switch. You have to say, let's call it proliferation. And I'm sure everybody believes that's what they're thinking. They talk about little countries getting hold of the bomb. Well, we wouldn't worry that much if Luxembourg got hold of the bomb. And it's not all racism, certainly not all racism. But there is a huge racial component in it. And nobody but me seems to notice that this word proliferation might just be another word for racism. I'll see you next week.